All right, trying something new here, and this will be the first episode of this new MMA podcast with me and a buddy. I'll let him introduce himself here. And this, like I said, it'll be the first episode. If we don't think it sucks, don't have an official name for the show yet, but he is in the waiting room here. Let's get him in. My buddy Nick here from Down Under. Let's see, here he comes.
How's it going, man?
What's up, dude?
How are ya?
Oh, I'm doing good, man. Freaking
yeah, good.
Talking about some MMA shit here, huh?
Yeah, for sure.
Yeah, dude. So, I mean, first of all, dude, what's going on with you? How you been?
Yeah, pretty good, man. I just forgot that we had a public holiday because Lizzie died. So we got the day off today.
You guys really do a holiday for that?
Ooh, I mean, it's like, I think it's the first time one of them have died in like 60 years. So it's so never happened while dies. I've been alive. I guess, yeah. They were just like, all right, we're going to have a public holiday in a week. So we're all like, no one's going to argue with that. We're like, yeah, sweet.
Yeah, I can tell you're real upset that she died too.
Yeah, it's supposed to be mourning day. We're supposed to be mourning today.
Well, shit. I hope that you at least had some beers and I don't know what else you partake in, but you know, all the shit that you need to do to get over that, man. It sounds like a tough thing. Are you wearing a Leon Edwards shirt?
Yeah, man.
Dope.
Rocking pound for pound, headshot dead.
Is that the brand new one that they just made?
Yeah, man. As soon as I heard that it was coming out, I was like, yeah, I got to get that. So
that's sick.
Went on to his management site and bought it.
He has that one and that Look At Me Now one too, right?
Yeah, there's a few different like pictures and styles that they've got, hoodies and stuff like that, which is cool.
That's sick. How do you think the next one goes? How do you think round two goes with those two?
I think I just got to take Leon again. I think he's just like, I don't know if it goes the same. Maybe there's no part of it that looks the same, but I feel like when they've been in there with someone for that long, you know, 25 minutes, you get a really good idea of kind of how that person feels, their strengths, their weaknesses. I mean, for both of them, really, like Usman's going to know a lot more about Leon. Actually, it's longer than 25 minutes, isn't it?
50, right? Didn't they do five rounds the first time? This was a long time ago, though.
I think it was three rounds the first time. So they've done five and three. Okay. So, yeah. So, I mean, they've got a lot of time in there.
40 minutes.
It's going to be interesting. Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah, dude. It was weird to watch that. And like, I don't think that anything is going to be the same. It can't be the same because the altitude seemed to really fuck with everybody that night, man. Luke Rockhold too. And even Paulo Costa, who's in great shape. I mean, the dude is in phenomenal shape and he didn't look like himself. Nobody did other than like Marab. Marab seemed fine.
Yeah. Well, Marab's from the mountains. So, you know, he probably just lives in that altitude his entire life and he's so used to it. So, I mean, that was another thing I was going to say as well. Like that makes a lot of sense that their cardios are going to be a lot different next time because of that altitude seemed to be playing a part in everyone.
Yeah.
It's going to be interesting. Like I'm actually very excited to see how it goes. I think, I don't know. I got to go with the underdog again. I assume Usman will be favored again because everyone will say it was a fluke and all that sort of stuff. But yeah.
Yeah, dude, there's no way that that's a fluke, man. It's shitty that they take that away from him too. Cause I think he's dope, man. I didn't really know much about him, to be honest. Like I'm somewhat, like I've liked the UFC, especially since I was a kid, but I kind of got out of it, you know, having to buy the events and shit like that when you're broke doesn't really work out too well. And I found out recently too, they're way cheaper in Australia to buy.
I wouldn't say way cheaper, but half I think price, they're a little bit right? cheaper. How much? I think it's between $50 and $70. I don't always pay for them. So
yeah,
I mean, I like to support the fighters through buying their shirts and stuff. I think that like the money just goes directly to them. If you do that, when you're buying the pay-per-views, like, yeah, they get pay-per-view points and stuff, but the UFC's getting most of that money. And then like I buy some of them, but you know, I'm still stingy on them too. Cause they're still like 70 Australian dollars or something. So okay. Yeah, I think is it like 100 US or something? How much is it for you guys?
Usually it's 75 American dollars, but I was looking at it cause I was trying to figure out how to get cheaper UFC fights. Like I agree. Like I'd rather kind of pay for them, to be honest, just cause I don't want like I want to fully enjoy it. I don't want there to even be like a tiny bit of anything that's going to like make me sketched out of the piracy shit and all that stuff. But I was looking at it, and I know in Japan it ends up being 25 American dollars. And I think it ends up being like 45 American dollars in Australia if you use a VPN and just say that you're watching from there.
Yeah. So it would like, yeah, 75 American for you guys. That's like 100 and maybe 15, about 110, 115 Australian dollars. So yeah, that's very expensive. I didn't expect that. yeah, it is a bit cheaper here. Yeah.
Hell yeah, dude. Well, hey, I mean, you got to do what you got to do. So what do you want to get into here, man? I mean, like I kind of, before we started, before you hopped on, I just kind of said, you know, this is like potentially the start of something new. Don't even have a name for this if it is going to be a show. And we might not even like let this air if we don't like how it sounds or anything. But I mean, what kind of shit did you want to get into here?
Well, we can talk about the Contender series because that was interesting. We had this 17-year-old fight. So
what'd you think of that?
I mean, like for a 17-year-old, he would kick my ass.
Sure.
Like for a 17-year-old, incredible. He's like a really good grappler. I kind of felt like I was just watching it, just like literally 5 minutes ago before we got on. I was watching the fight again, and I just felt like at times he even forgot that he was in a fight. Like it was almost like he like just thought he was in a grappling match. He wasn't throwing any punches, and it was like when an old mate would throw a strike and he'd get hit in the face, it was almost like he'd wake up and be like, oh shit, I'm actually fighting, like this isn't a grappling match. But no, he's good. One thing I like, he's 17, so it's like the UFC can do this in so many ways. They can slow play him because he could literally do like one fight a year for the next 5 years and it will do no damage to his career because he'll be like, what, 23 at that point?
Yeah.
You could do one fight a year, do 10 months of training a year, build up those skills to a crazy level and then go make a title run at like 23, 24. Or they could go the whole route of youngest UFC champion and play the whole 17, 18-year-old kind of thing. I mean, he's definitely got time to build the skills. I just like if they try and fast play him though, I don't think that's going to go very well.
Yeah, I think he just turned 18 today. If I heard correctly, okay. They were saying that his birthday was the day after the Week 9 Contender Series, and I have it pulled up here. So he's already 18. It's official. He's an adult now, so he can like I guess definitely get in to. And what a weird thing too. Why not play him the 10th and final week, right? Why not run him out there when he is 18? It's a gimmick. It's a total gimmick, obviously. I mean, I think everyone knows that. But this dude that he fought, this Mando Gutierrez, I was surprised with how bad this dude's fight IQ was, man. He was not as good as I thought he was going to be. I think you could put an average 25-year-old in there, an average 25 MMA fighter. Doesn't need to necessarily be the UFC. I think this Mando Gutierrez is way below average, dude. And that's not to take away from this kid. I really didn't think he was going to win. I kind of didn't want him to win. I think that it's kind of bad to get into this that young at this high of a level. But if they slow play him, like you said, I think that, you know, it could be potentially a game changer for not just him, but any young kid trying to get into this.
Yeah, I mean, they could do like a development type thing with him. Somehow I feel like they're not going to do that. Like they're going to probably bring guys in for him to fight, and they're going to play off the gimmick thing, the 18, like youngest UFC fighter by, I mean, I think the youngest UFC fighter previously was maybe like 20 or 21.
I think so, 19, that dude with the curly hair. I forget his name.
Chase Hooper.
Was that him? Yeah, maybe.
Yeah, possibly. Yeah, he was very young too. And I mean, look, like he's not having the worst career. Like I feel Chase Hooper kind of started too early only because of the fact that he hadn't like fully matured physically. So he was like getting manhandled in certain situations. But he seems to be now, whereas this kid looks a bit more filled out. Like he looks, you know, a bit more, adult, like in his like sort of in the physical sense. I did find like he was having a bit of trouble at times, like trying to get the finish with this guy.
Yeah.
He just didn't seem to have the strength against the 25-year-old to do it. But I mean, he still dominated him. It was 30-27. I think that was like 10 minutes of control time or something. So
yeah,
it's going to be interesting.
There's something weird about that, dude, because I remember when we were talking about this, we DM a lot about this shit, obviously. And it's fun. It's kind of a trip to me still, even though like I've grown up around this technology. It's funny to be able to watch a fight live and talk to somebody being here in the United States, talking to somebody in Australia and go back and forth live on this shit. It blows my mind. Like when I really think about it, but I was saying this that, you know, Rosas here, he has fought the people that he's fought. You add up all of their wins and their total fights even, and they don't add up to how many wins Gutierrez had, right? You got a 0-2 dude, a 2-0, a 1-0, a 0-0, a 0-1. And then obviously his grappling fights before that, man, that's not much experience at all, dude. And so that's why I was like, dude, there's no fucking way that this guy is going to beat this 25-year-old who on paper looks so much better. You see who he's fought. 5-0 was Rosas, and then 4-1, 4-4, 3-1, 3-0, 5-2. That's not a bad record right there, you know? It's crazy that it worked out like that. And like, you know, my conspiracy brain sometimes makes me think that these things are totally set up for this shit to happen.
It's the UFC, man. They have the best matchmakers in the game. They have all the money in the game. They can set up, they can make anyone look like anything that they want to. So yeah, at this point, I don't even think that's conspiratorial. Like that's just like, that's the truth with so many. Yeah. I agree with you, man. Like they could have literally brought in this guy. I mean, I didn't know of this guy beforehand. They could have seen something in this guy previously and went, this kid's going to have it all over him. You could be absolutely right about that. Or I saw that he fought a guy with...
Sorry, go ahead.
I saw that this guy, he fought someone with the last name Worthy. I wonder if that's that Karma Worthy. I wonder if he's related to him. Chaka Worthy, yeah. There's a UFC fighter, ex. UFC fighter called Karma Worthy.
Karma Worthy, okay. I never heard of him. See, that's the thing. You know a lot more of these names than I do, and I think that's why, you know, if we get this show off the ground and we actually start something with it, I think it could be pretty cool, dude, because I come at it from a completely different angle than you do, and we even really disagree on the bets quite often. And, I mean, you know, we're going to, you know, eventually lay down some, like, ideas for bets and things like that, but, you know, I'm down to, like, put what I think and then what you think on these things, but... Dude, I mean, do you think it goes as far as like maybe they took Gutierrez and they said, hey, we'll pay you a certain amount of money, $20,000, $25,000 to go in there and just kind of roll around with this kid and, you know, make it clearly dominant for him. Just again, on paper, I don't think there's any way that this dude loses. I just really don't. That's in my head. I see it going that far.
I just like purely off the, like you got to think of the ego of a 25-year-old fighter with a record of 7-1. Previous to this fight, 7-1, like the ego he's got, he's not gonna lay down for 20 grand or anything. Like he was going out there to beat Rosas, like okay. In my opinion. But I just think like Sean Shelby and Mick Maynard, the matchmakers of the UFC, like they know stuff that we don't know. Like they see things and they're able to make matches that people like beforehand will be like, oh, that's either, you know, this guy's going to blast that guy or this is an uneven matchup and you end up watching the fight and it's just completely different to what you thought beforehand. I just reckon, I think the matchmakers would have brought in someone that they knew could test this guy, but wasn't going to beat him.
Okay. Make him look good. Kind of.
Yeah. I mean, like you see, like, for instance, just a recent one is Paddy Pimblett versus Jordan Levitt.
Yeah,
like the matchmakers, they knew what they were doing there. Jordan Levitt was seen as a bit of a higher test. People were like, "Oh, I really think Jordan Levitt could do this." You know, the way people saw it beforehand was very divided. Whether it was going to be a blowout for Paddy, or whether it was going to actually be a test, like they knew what they were doing. And when it happened, it was pretty even. The first comes to the second. Paddy gets the submission pretty easily and, you know, everyone's like, oh, well, that was a bit of a better test. They knew what they were doing with those matchmaking. Like they know how to, they can make anyone look like anything they want. They can make people look bad or good. I mean, look what they did with Pereira, for instance. Yeah. He's going to fight Izzy he's had 4 UFC fights and he's looked incredible.
Dude, I want to get into him too later for sure. But you bring up a good point there with like them making certain stars, like Paddy Pimblett kid's really not, he's not top tier in the UFC. He really isn't. I mean, he's mid grade at best. Jordan Leavitt, you know, being where he is, that dude is not high level either. And they're saying that this guy is his biggest test. I mean, the dude's a big time grappler. That's all that he really is. And Patty is always looking for a guillotine, right? Like that's the one thing that he really, really does constantly is he's always going for your guillotine. And I heard that that is the very, the lowest percentage submission out there. Like people go for those more often than actually getting them. It's the highest percentage of failure in any kind of submission because you can just pop right out of it. Right. So I don't know, man, he's done a good job marketing himself. Similar with Sean O'Malley. I think Sean O'Malley is very overrated, dude. I like watching him fight. I'm excited for 280, partly a majority because of him and then Charles, right? But, man, he's overrated too, you know? So I don't know. We'll see. How do you feel about those two, though? Like, as far as, like, where the public sees them and where their ability actually is?
Yeah, so I think, like, Patty's a really good grappler. He is a really good grappler. His skill in grappling is pretty good. I think he could do well, let's say if he was to just fight UFC fighters in a grappling match, like if they were to go over to Eddie Bravo's frigging grappling or whatever, and he was to go against like probably not a Gilbert Burns would probably wrap him up like a pretzel, but you know, someone in like top 15, top 10 in grappling, he would probably do pretty well. And he's fought guys beforehand like Soren Buck and stuff that they're pretty good prospects as well. In terms of like the stand up, Paddy has so many holes. He leaves his chin exposed so much. His hands are kind of low at times. Like he's in the lightweight division. So exactly what you're saying. Like, as soon as I don't see anyone that he could compete with in a top 15 MMA fight right now in the lightweight division. But again, he's like, I don't know how old he is. Is he like mid 20s? Like he's got time to build.
Yeah, he's got plenty of time to build. Yeah, so, I mean, we're looking right here at the top 15 in the lightweight division just on UFC's website. I actually like their website. A lot of people don't like it, but I think it's pretty dope.
Him versus Tony would be interesting, but then I think he would probably even get beaten by Dan Hooker. He'd get beaten by he'd get submitted by Jalen Turner just purely on size, I think, maybe, because Jalen Turner's like 6'3" and like a black belt, I'm pretty sure, in jiu-jitsu, which Patty is as well. But
I never heard of this dude. Okay.
Yeah, Jack, the Tarantula.
The Tarantula, dude. That's a knockoff. That's like a great value version of Anderson Silva, the Spider, dude. Yeah. The Tarantula. Yeah.
You got Ismagulov. I think he might be like a Kazakhstani. I know this guy. I think he's a little bit of an older guy, this fella. Yeah, Paddy would get beaten by this guy. So pretty much like the top 14, I think he would get beaten by.
Well, dude, the next guy on the list here is Conor McGregor. And I actually heard Chael Sonnen, who I love that dude's show. That dude's, his commentary is brilliant. Like he kind of is rambly and ranty, but I like that style of talking. There's never a second of dead time when you're talking to that or hearing that guy talk. He says that Conor McGregor versus Paddy Pimblett would be the absolute biggest pay-per-view in UFC history. And I don't see where he's coming from on that.
I could definitely see that. I could definitely see that if they built it right. It would purely be on promotion and character. It would have nothing to do with what's going to happen in the fight.
Sure.
But I could see it being, possibly the biggest pay-per-view just purely off of the hype of Conor, the hype of Paddy. That's it. Nothing to do with what's going to happen in the fight. Like, just purely off of them two. Like, they would do the whole Floyd and Mayweather thing for that fight, I could see. They would tour around a press conference.
Yeah, it'd be like hours just and hours talking of shit. Press conferences.
Yeah. So I could see that. Just purely on a hype factor, like not even going into what would happen in the fight. But yeah, I could see that being probably the biggest pay-per-view ever, which is silly to say. Like, so many of these fights don't happen on meritocracy anymore. Same with like the viewership and like the level of stardom of the fighters. Like, none of it's on meritocracy anymore. It's all like hype and what they can do with the social media and stuff, which is fine. Like, that's the world we live in.
Business,
That's Sean O'Malley. Like, he discovered early that he wasn't just getting paid from the UFC. He was getting put on a platform that he could use to his advantage, you know, go on Twitch, go and get sponsors, do brand partnerships, all this sort of stuff. And that's why he's sort of paid and the way he is, you know, because he used the platform as opposed to trying to so much bargain about what he gets paid from the UFC. He's just like, well, I'm just going to use this platform and get famous elsewhere. And it's worked for him.
It is a shame too, though. Like you said, I mean, as a fight fan, you know, people would want to watch the very best fights, but they are trying to market to a wider audience. I know that they grew like 46% during the pandemic. So, I mean, they're catering to a whole new set of fans. Sean O'Malley being ranked 12 in his division. What is he, bantamweight? Yeah, bantamweight.
And fighting division. One.
and he's fighting number one. He should be at number eight. He should be ahead of Munoz, but he pulled some weird shit. And I think, I mean, I don't know, man. I think it's really weird how that fight shook out. Who did he fight right before that?
Do you think he was coming back in the second? Because I do think he was starting to come back in the second. I could see that he was starting to figure stuff out. Whether that means he was going to win the second and the third, I do think he was starting to come back in the second. And I think there is some weirdness to the fouls and injuries that went down. I'm not going to go as far as to say that like Pedro Munoz faked them or anything, but I just think there was some weirdness. He gets kicked in the groin. He doesn't grab his groin. As soon as the fight stops, he starts like grabbing his eye.
Yeah.
And like, that was something that O'Malley pointed out, but that is really weird. Like, you get kicked in the balls, you're grabbing your balls. You're not worrying about something that happened to your eye. Like, I've been hitting the balls a few times and I know how much it hurts. Like, I'm grabbing them. I'm not grabbing my eye.
Well, dude, and as opposed to like this, you know, during the contender series, just to throw it back there real quick, dude, Jacoby took a massive shot. Did you see that?
I did see it briefly. I was watching while I was working, but yeah, I saw like as it happened, I saw the replay of it and I was like, damn, that was, yeah. I didn't actually realize that Austin Lane had been knocked out by Greg Hardy.
Dude, that's why I bet against him.
Yeah, I must have completely skipped out of that over my Tapology when I was doing my bets, because that would have really made me question stuff if I had seen that. I would have been, yeah. And then I saw the replay as the fight was coming on and I was like, holy shit, this dude lost to Greg Hardy. What the hell? Maybe I shouldn't have bet on him. But he came through in the end. Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, he's
57 seconds.
Big names. Yeah. Yeah, 57. So I was going to ask you this too. When it says 57 seconds, is that how much time is on the clock or how much time going into the fight?
I believe that is how much time is going into the fight. So in 57 seconds, it happened. Pretty sure. Yeah.
Yeah, that's not a good look because, yeah, he went on to have a very mediocre UFC career. I mean, he fought some badass dudes. I mean, Spivak is dope. Tai Tuivasa, that's our dude right there. I love Tai Tuivasa. Yeah,
Tabora is not that great.
I mean,
he's not he's not the worst. He's top 15 heavyweight, but he's not. I don't see him as one of like an elite heavyweight. I don't see him as an elite heavyweight. Put it that way.
Sure. So when he comes into the UFC, he loses to Alan Crowder, somebody I hadn't heard of, to be honest.
I don't know that name.
Yeah, dude. So it's just he had a decent record, I guess, 9-3. I mean, you'd like to see like a more of like a 9-1, but I don't know, man. I think you know, just to go back to like these fighters like O'Malley and stuff that use the brand. I get it. It's smart marketing. It's good business. But you know, some people say like the Full Send guys and stuff. People that are a part of that audience, they say that Sean O'Malley is the greatest of all time and shit. You know, and it's just goofy. It's goofy.
Yeah, I've got there's a young guy at my work that, he was going on about O'Malley a fair bit the other day and talking about him like, you know, he's a goat and all this sort of stuff. It's like, yeah, all right. Like, I didn't say anything, but it makes me realize how the UFC is pushing out to a wider audience and how they are like marketing to different demographics and with certain people. You know, I mean, you see it with like the Chinese stars, the Russian stars. They're targeting certain countries and then they're doing events in those countries. And I mean, it's good business for MMA. It's only going to make it more and more popular. But then you get a lot of casuals in the mix which, hey, it is what it is.
It's fun. I mean, like, they everyone has, I mean, dude, I'm much more of a casual at this point than like you are. You know, I know that you don't know everything about this shit.
No.
But dude, you know a lot more than I do. You know what I mean? And that's why it'll be kind of fun to just get into this shit a little bit. I know for a fact, you know, having people like Corey Sandhagen, who's number four in the bantamweight division, he would work O'Malley, I think, bad. I think he would beat, yeah. I think he'd beat the shit out of O'Malley. Marlon Vera, like it or not, he beat O'Malley fair and square. I don't really think it was that much of a fluke. He was kind of working him before that. I think Dominic Cruz, honestly, that would be a pretty competitive fight, O'Malley and Dominic Cruz. So
I felt like Cheeto was losing a little bit in the fight to O'Malley, but when I say that, you've got to realize Cheeto's losing nearly every fight that he has, and then he knocks a dude out.
And he has a big shot.
Yeah, and then he wins. So that's usually how he fights. I think maybe in the Rob Font fight was maybe one of the only fights recently where he was really sort of dominating a guy. Yeah. I think Cruz was having some good success against him. He got beat by Aldo. Edgar was having good success against him. But yeah, Cheeto won those fights. He got the knockout. So yeah, like, I agree with you. I feel like Cheeto was losing that fight to O'Malley, but then he got the shot that he always gets, and he knocked O'Malley down with the leg thing, and then O'Malley was out cold for a second there. You see it in the replay. Cheeto elbows him, O'Malley's lights go out for like half a second, and his arms go up, and then he comes back and he like realizes what's happened, and he's like, all right. So yeah, that was a fair shot for Cheeto. He did literally beat O'Malley, but I'd love to see that fight again. And I honestly, see, we've got O'Malley versus Petr Yan. I don't think Cheeto's got a fight. The Cheeto, O'Malley's always said him versus Cheeto again would be a big fight, and it's now getting to the point where it would be a big fight. Like, you could, that could be a main event, really.
I take Cheeto in it, though, dude. I wasn't a big Cheeto fan. Like, I was on that O'Malley bandwagon, and I was like, oh, dude, this dude got lucky. And then just kind of watching how Vera fights, the dude's a G, man. He can take hits. You can see. Who's beat him last? Who was the last guy to beat him?
Aldo.
Was it Aldo? Jose Aldo. Aldo. Okay.
Yep.
Yeah. Who just retired, dude. Shout out.
For me, it would, yeah. Yeah, that was crazy. I thought he was going to have another, like, he's had one more fight on his contract. So I just thought he was going to do that. Like, it's not like he's been getting dominated. Like, he has been beating other dudes. So I was really
People
surprised.
People hate Marab for it, dude. People are so mad at Marab right now.
Yeah. I was a little mad when I was watching that fight. I was like, come on, dude. Like, this is Aldo. Just fight him a little bit. Like,
it sucked. Yeah. It sucked. I don't like that style. Like a lot of people hate Aljo too, right? Aljamain Sterling, because
I don't like him.
I mean, it's a boring style, dude. It really is a boring style. Do you not like his personality or his style?
I'm probably more his personality. His style is what it is. It's against Jan, it was very effective.
Yeah,
I didn't like that he backpacked a lot and didn't seem to be going for the submission and seemed to just be like, I'm going to win this round by backpacking. I feel like you've always got to be trying to finish a guy. That's the goal. Like, not, I'm going to say that, I don't mean doing stupid things and putting yourself at risk, but like, if you've got a guy's back, like, I want to see major action of you trying to choke that guy out or knock him out. I don't want to see you just sitting on his back going, well, I'm just going to take this round. That to me is boring and annoying. But yeah, like, his style is effective. He seems like, after he had this neck surgery, it did what it needed to do, and it has revamped him. I was very suspicious on that. I was like wondering whether he was going to come back even worse, because like, neck surgery is a pretty big deal. But he beat Jan. He looked good. Yeah, it's going to be interesting going forward. He's fighting TJ next week, or not next week, but 280, whatever that is, 3 weeks away, I think.
In October. I think
probably beats
segue.
TJ.
That I was going to ask you, dude, how do you feel about that fight? Because I mean, I'm not a big TJ fan.
I hate both of them. It's like, it's a fight where, like, I hope they, like, in the first 10 seconds, they both come out and kick each other's legs, and they both get Anderson silvered. Like, that's what I hope happens.
Or they both knock each other out somehow.
Yeah, like at the same time, so that no one wins. It has, like, I want them both to lose. I just hate them both. But yeah, I think he probably beats TJ with the wrestling.
What style is TJ fight in? Do you know off the top of your head? Because I haven't seen this dude fight other than when he fought Sanhagen. I went back and watched that.
Well, he says Bang Muay Thai. That's what he gets announced as a Bang Muay Thai fighter. So he's like pressure Muay Thai, like that, like a Cruz mixed with a Garbrandt, like that style. Yeah, Cruz mixed with Garbrandt, maybe.
Okay.
Probably not as good wrestling as Cruz. He lost to Cruz back there, in the day.
In 2016.
And that was after Cruz came back from like 3 years of injuries too. And came back and beat the dude. It was pretty cool. But
dude, Cruz went to a high school right down the street from where I grew up. Not the same high school I did, but he grew up in Tucson. And it pisses me off that he claims San Diego as his fucking home, dude. It's just like a cooler place to say that you're from than Tucson. Tucson's kind of a dump to a lot of people. But, I mean, when you got somebody that's this badass and has done this much in MMA, it's like, dude, you got to fucking put Tucson up a little bit here because no one else does.
Yeah. I think I've heard him say it on Ariel's show before, though. That's where he's originally from. But, yeah.
Yeah, dude. So then let's get a little bit into 280, dude, and then I want to go back to 279 because I'm excited for that one too. It's not as much of a stacked card, but with 280, I mean, you have obviously it's going to be pretty fucking interesting with the middleweight title. Another one that's kind of strange, you know, you get this dude that has six fights in MMA, 6-0 though, right? If I'm remembering right. Alex Pereira, and then going against Israel Adesanya, who has become increasingly boring, in my opinion. I don't know how you feel about his style and stuff, but what do you have to say about the main event in 280?
Yeah, well, his style, it's effective. It is boring nowadays. It wasn't originally on his come up. He was, you know, very aggressive. I always remember the Brunson fight. That was sick. He knocked that dude down like four times in like 30 seconds. Like that was so sick. The Gastelum fight, crazy. Yeah, Silva. And then Silva, even the Costa fight was sick. But yeah, he's become increasingly boring. I think there's going to be a lot of like mental games played. Like I want to see how Izzy gets at like press conferences and leading up to it. Like, I don't know. It's very hard because I don't know if there's going to be any wrestling or anything in it. I could see a world where Izzy just shoots on the dude and tries, like, he's like a purple belt or it could even be close to black belt. Now there could be a world where Izzy just takes him down and tries to submit him because it's like, it seems like the easiest way to victory. Pereira does train with Glover constantly. So I'd very highly doubt that like Pereira has no wrestling or submission ability. Like I'm pretty sure he's pretty decent at that. But as for like choosing a side right now, I would lean towards Izzy just because of the pedigree and what we've seen. It could be a boring win, but yeah. Yeah, I'm not solid on that just yet. It's definitely going to be interesting.
I just realized what I did too. I said we're going to talk about 280 and here we are talking about 279. So my bad on that. But yeah, 279 is this one right here, correct?
Because 280 think O'Malley's is first. Dubai. Yeah, what? I thought O'Malley was before this.
No, O'Malley's going to be in Dubai. So we just had 278. Okay. Or no, which one is this? Let me see. UFC.
Yeah, I'm a bit mixed up because I'm pretty sure it goes, we have these two fight nights. We have the Jan Dern one and then the, I think it's like Araujo or something. And then I thought after that was the O'Malley, Islam Makhachev, like all that sort of gear over at Dubai.
Yeah, you're right, dude. Okay, my bad. So yeah, 81. We just had 279. 279 was a shit show. Maybe that's what's confusing me here. But yeah, so 281 is what we're talking about. That's my mistake. That's fucking retarded to mix all them up. But yeah, because you have these two. And as far as I'm concerned, man, I don't see Israel Adesanya losing that, to be honest. But I mean, Pereira is pretty dope. He hits hard. He's bad at grappling.
Oh, he's 6-1, by the way. There you go. I actually do remember that. I think he lost via submission very early, like maybe his first fight or second fight or something. They wouldn't be, unless they're including, no, they wouldn't be including that. I would say to go down a little bit. Probably keep going down. There we go. There, right there. Rear naked choke in round three. So he went a few rounds.
Okay.
I think I have seen the highlights of that fight. I wouldn't have watched the whole fight, but I think I've seen the highlights of it. And it's in Jungle Fight too, which is interesting. I'm pretty sure they're allowed to juice and stuff over there.
Nice. Yeah, dude. I mean, where did he start in the UFC? It looks like in 2021, so not long ago. This Bruno Silva fight was really misleading to me because that was who was giving him a hard time grappling. And then Silva goes out and gets his ass beat by, was it Mearshart that beat him recently? Yeah, dude.
I think I remember that. Yeah.
Yeah.
I might have even bet on Bruno Silva as well.
You did, I think, because we were both talking about it. And we're like, yeah, there's no way. Because then you see Mearshart getting knocked out in like 17 seconds by Chimaev, right? So it's like, yeah, dude, this dude can't hang with this guy. But yeah, it's crazy how some of these things work out. And then just complete domination against Strickland, who shouldn't have been standing up with him in the first place. But yeah, man. Yeah,
he should have went the easy route, which was, well, the supposed proposed easy route, because we haven't, I mean, we saw a little bit against Bruno Silva and it was a bit of a tough time. But yeah, I think I'm feeling like that's one of the routes to victory with this guy. And I felt like Strickland had the skills to do that and chose to be a man, so to speak, and stand up and try and test his fists and his chin against the dude. And it did not work out.
He's an interesting dude, man. He's a very, very strange guy. But yeah, I mean, all the power.
I like Strickland.
I love him, dude.
It's
I really
funny
like
as fuck
watching him at press conferences because he doesn't know how to talk. It's like, I feel like that's how I would be at a press conference. Like when I'm nervous, I say fucking shit all the time. And that's him, dude. But he's on like the world stage, just like saying the everything wrong. And it's just, it's awesome. So yeah, no, I'm a fan of him, but he's an interesting character, man, for sure. Now, what about this next one? Carla Esparza and Weili Zhang. I thought that you say those backwards there because it's China, right? Zhang Weili.
Yeah, so I think her first name would be Zhang. And then her last name would be Whaley, yeah. But just before we go on to that, I just wanted to say with Pereira, like, he's another one. Look how they've built him. They haven't put him up against, I mean, maybe he probably would knock out Brunson, but they didn't test him against Brunson. They didn't test him against Gastelum. They didn't test him against any of these nuggets of guys that are going to just try and grind on him. And they built him into a guy where people are potentially going, Adesanya's going to get his head knocked off. Like, that is a thing that people are saying. So it's like they build people to these points where they make it look like anything can happen. Like, I don't know what's going to happen. Pereira looks skilled, but they've built him into this point where he's the boogeyman. He's going to be the guy to beat Adesanya. And they can do that for anyone. You know what I mean? Like, it's all about those matchmaking. Style makes fights.
I think the age comes to play here a little bit. I don't think they want to make him go at the proper ranks because he is 35, which isn't terribly old. But, I mean, he's already 2 years older than Adesanya, who's really at his prime, it seems, right now. He hasn't been tested in his last few fights. And like you say, I think that this is still the same. Yeah, look at this, dude. Tapology, everyone thinks that Pereira's going to knock out Adesanya. And they even go as far as saying that if it goes the distance, that Pereira will have such a dominant performance that he's going to win the belt back, or win the belt in general, from Adesanya. So, yeah, they've really branded this in an interesting way, for sure. I'm going to bet on Pereira, probably, if the odds are still the same. But, I mean, if you can get Izzy at plus odds, I mean, dude, I would jump on Izzy for positive odds, for sure.
I'm just having a look now to see if there is. Here we go. So, Israel. So, I'm going to say it in Australian style. Israel is $1.60 to win, which means every $100 you bet, you get 160 back. And Alex Pereira is $2.40. So he is 2.5 to 1, basically, to win. So Alex Pereira is a pretty big underdog against Israel in betting odds. But like you said, on Tapology, it's Pereira as the favorite. So it's interesting. The bookies have Adesanya as a massive favorite.
Yeah, well, I mean, we see Tapology getting it wrong a lot. I mean, they because they're it's a hype hype train thing, right? Everybody's like jumping on the hype. I'm sure I wouldn't be surprised if they're saying that overwhelmingly that what's his name? O'Malley is going to beat Jan. I haven't checked yet. But I mean, because I consider that to be real even.
I think the rounds play a factor into it too. Just as, and I would say the same about the Cheeto fight. I would find a 5-round Cheeto versus O'Malley fight to favor Cheeto, okay. But I would find a 3-round fight with Cheeto and O'Malley at this point to favor O'Malley, just because there's less opportunities for Cheeto to get that big hit in a 3-round fight. I mean, he did get it in the first round last time, I think, or maybe early second. Pretty sure it was first round, but yeah, I think rounds come into play. So with the Jan thing, 5 rounds, I mean 3 rounds, sorry, this fight, I see that favoring O'Malley. Overall, I see Jan having an immensely larger catalog of people he's fought that have higher skills than O'Malley, much more experience.
Yeah.
His fighting style seems much more complete. But again, the reach also plays a factor into it. O'Malley's one of the biggest bantamweights. Jan's one of the smallest. Like, that's pretty crazy. Like 5'11 versus 5'7, yeah. What's the reach? 60 sets, so 5 centimeters of reach. It's not the most I've seen bigger, but it's still pretty dramatic.
Well, no, it's over 10 centimeters of reach, right? It's 13 centimeters.
Oh, wow. Yeah, sorry.
These are inches, because United States, yeah. That's significant, dude.
Yeah, yeah, that is big. That's a lot. So it's going to be interesting, man. Jan's got that really high guard and he brings a lot of pressure. I know O'Malley can fight on the back foot and he's looked good fighting on the back foot, but he's looked good fighting on the back foot against Chris Moutinho, who, let's face it, is universes different to beat a Jan.
So, how do you think Jan's chin stacks up against Moutinho's, though? Because Moutinho showed that he has a fucking chin.
Absolutely. Right?
Is that his name?
But have we? Yeah, yeah. But I don't recall a time where I've seen Eddie Jan's chin tested.
Okay.
Did he get knocked down by Sterling at any point in that fight? I don't think so. He got taken down a lot, but I don't think he got knocked down. I don't know. I guess with stereotypes, he's a little thick Russian dude. I would imagine he's got a pretty good chin. I imagine he could take a hit pretty well, but I don't recall a time where I've seen it tested. Yeah, I'm excited for that fight, dude.
Yeah.
Again, they've built that fight into a point where we might see O'Malley outclassed like you've never seen before, but they've built it to a point where like it's interesting. Like we believe it's going to be competitive. So, yeah. I mean, nothing, well, I do anyway.
Nothing crazy standing out. I always like to watch the Swedish fight just because of the gym.
Jelena Almeida down there.
Does she train at the same gym as... No, okay. Yeah, man. So Almeida, that's a good prelim fight, you say?
Yeah, and, he's a round one bet usually. You lock that dude in for a round one submission knockout? Or KO. Yeah. Okay.
All right. Is this a Nurmagomedov? Is this like part of the Nurmagomedovs? Is that his cousin?
Possibly. Abu Bakr. I don't think I've seen him fight before. A
couple Russians fighting. That'll be interesting. Anytime someone's name ends in a V, it's going to be interesting to watch these dudes fight because they're usually pretty damn tough.
If you see the Medov, you're like, okay, maybe I bet on the Medov.
Yeah. Or just a Dov or an Aev. Like, were you watching? Did you watch the whole Paris card?
Yes. Yeah.
I forget his name, but the tall German dude, I think he's German, or maybe he just fights out of Germany, but he's got a Russian name. Brand new dude.
I don't remember off the top of my head, but I think I remember seeing the fight.
He just kicks him in the face right away.
Yeah, that rings a bell. Definitely.
Let's see, we're about to find out right now.
Roman Kopilov?
Magomedov, dude.
Oh, this guy. Okay.
Yeah. Don't fuck with anyone with the V at the end punches. Of their name.
Yeah, wow.
Yeah, if you watch that one, and look how quick it was. 19 seconds in round one. It was pretty drastic. But yeah, I mean, like I said, I usually bet on these dudes with the V in the last name. Call it stereotyping, but it's a positive stereotype, so
You remember Muhammad Makhachev's debut at the first London card, where he just runs out and knees out doing the head and just chokes him, and it was like 30 seconds or something?
No, dude.
Yeah, that was pretty sick. I'm really, really high on that Muhammad Makhachev, dude. I reckon he could just be a double champion in the future. Like, no bullshit.
Really? This
Yeah.
guy here?
Yeah. Yeah, man. Yeah. I believe he could literally be a double champion in the next 4 to 5 years, because he's young as well. I think he's like 21. He had like 25 amateur fights or something, undefeated. So he's got like a 35-0 record, I'm pretty sure, in total, like 7-0 pro and then like 25-0 amateur. Yeah, man, this guy, he can do it all. He can strike, he can wrestle, submissions. He's been training with Tom Aspinall's family. Tom Aspinall's family's like really respected in jiu-jitsu, if you didn't know that. And he's been training with them since he was like a little kid. You can see his amateur record there. It's just all spotless. Green.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And he's not fighting bums. I mean, there's a couple people. There's a 13-3. That's a pretty darn good record. 11-2. Again, these are amateurs. 10-8. That's questionable.
And the thing is, he's fighting in the IMMAF as well, which is like the absolute pinnacle of world amateur fighting. Like, that is the absolute pinnacle of amateur fighting, is the IMMAF championships, and he has won it just consecutive years, one after the other, like constantly. And then he's come into the pros and just dominated in the pros. You know, his UFC debut, like I said, he won in like 30 seconds or something, against a guy that wasn't really a slouch, Cody Durden, 12-3. You know, there you go, 58 seconds, round one. He fought Charles Johnson, which that was interesting. He seemed to have a lot of trouble in that fight. Not trouble. He couldn't finish the guy, is what I'm saying. He still dominated him, but it was very wrestling heavy. And yeah, now he's fighting this guy, which seems like a bit of a banger, this guy. Like, he seems like a stand up and swing type of guy, which is going to be interesting again to see which route Muhammad takes. But I will be loading up on Muhammad. I've got so much, like, I think this dude's the real deal. Like, he's crazy.
You going round one knockout, or like, if you were to try and like, and not to, you know, say what you're officially betting right now, but like, what are you leaning towards right now?
Probably inside the distance. He seems to be able to do different things, knockouts and submissions. So I would probably just take him inside the distance, even though, like I said, he went to decision and seemed to have a little bit of adversity. I don't know what the right word would be, but he just couldn't finish the guy. It was very wrestling heavy. He didn't look as dominant as he usually looks. But yeah, I would say within the distance, this guy seems like, I would have to do a little bit more research on Malcolm Gordon. I do remember seeing him fight two or three times. And I think he is more of a stand-up pressure type guy. So, yeah, I would say that I'm locking in Muhammad by finish. I don't know what round or anything, but in the distance.
So let me ask you a question about a little bit about betting before we get back to that 281 card. I got to make sure I keep these numbers straight, because I'm sure that that's something that they light you up for if you cross those up, which I shouldn't have in the first place. We just had 279. But when you're looking at somebody that you're trying to pick betting, like, obviously you're partial to this dude, this Muhammad Makhachev, or however you say his name exactly, Makhachev. Do you go and do you look at like the gym that they train at and like who they train with at the same gym? Because Tapology is not always right, right? Do you look at their social media when you have the time to like look into these guys? Like, what kind of things are you looking at? What are like some red flags to you and shit like that?
Yeah, I mean, I would look. I wouldn't be impartial looking at any of that stuff. Like, I do look at the gym a lot. Like, that is interesting. Like, if you see like a prospect or a debutant coming out, like, sometimes it's hard to get a bit of info. But if you see like they train at American Top Team or something, like, American Top Team doesn't take bums. Like, they don't take people just off the street. Like, you see a gym like that, ATT or AKA, or, you know, like, that is interesting. That's usually like, I wouldn't call it whatever the opposite to a red flag is, a green flag. Like, that's a good thing. But yeah, I mean, you could look at their social media, see what they're doing. I usually follow a lot of like the, like, more prospecty type dudes on Twitter and, see what they're sort of doing, see who they're training with. Like, that was interesting last weekend. Who was it? That's right. Corey Sandhagen. He's been training with Ryan Hall. and like staying at his house and stuff. And I don't know if you know Ryan Hall, but he's like an absolute like wizard at grappling.
Okay. I never heard
so
of
that was that. I feel like one of the yeah so he is a UFC fighter and he, yeah like he was just leg locking dudes. I think he's just had his first loss to Ilya Topuria a few months back. He got knocked out by Ilya Topuria, I'm pretty sure it was, but before that he was like undefeated, just leg locking dudes everywhere, like grappling dudes. There's videos of him on the internet like having dudes like try and start on him in bars and he just like sits on top of them and like locks them up in Kimuras and shit till the police get there.
Oh like, shit. Oh, did you say Ryan Hall?
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Yeah, I have heard of that dude. My bad. You kind of glitched out there for a second, but yeah, no, Ryan Hall. Definitely.
Yeah, so like, okay. That was like a big thing that stood out to me with the Corey Sandhagen fight beforehand was that he'd been training and like literally living with Ryan Hall for weeks on end at times and training with him and doing submission. And I was like, maybe this is going to be a bit of a wrestling heavy fight. Maybe there's going to be that. And when we saw that, which we never saw from Corey Sandhagen before, and I think it was one of the reasons he won that fight. Was the threatening of the takedowns, was the pressure of like grinding against the fence, all that sort of stuff. So yeah, man, like you said, like just where they train, little tidbits who they're training with. Like I watch all of Ariel Helwani's shows every week. So, you know, there's probably 10 or 12 interviews on there a week, which you hear a lot of stuff, what fighters are doing. And it's usually like the fighters that are leading up to the weekend. Yeah. So it sort of gives you like an insight to what's going on in their mind, how they're feeling. Yeah, I take anything really, any info I can get. I'll usually like, I guess for the, like if I'm putting some decent bets on some certain people, I will watch a little bit of tape. Just go to Fight Pass and probably watch their most recent fight. Or if they've fought someone who I feel is very good, whether win or lose, I will go and see how they did against that person. Yeah, anything like that. Tapology is like a wealth of knowledge, as you know. You can go back and see the record where they train. All their social media links are on there.
I found this new method. I mean, I haven't been betting on this stuff for too long, but I've had some decent success with it. Like I had my worst week for this past contender series is week 9. And it was, I know that people talk about shit in units. I don't really like talking about it in units personally. I think it's just kind of like, it's weird for people, I think, but I would be up basically 2 units on like my worst possible week, you know? And like most of the time I'm up several units because of this weird way that I've been doing it. Like if I feel like in that Sandhagen fight, for example, I hadn't heard of Song Yadong, right? I know that he's like a big prospect and I know he's inside the top 15, he's ranked and everything. Him coming up, you know, not really knowing a whole lot about him. And I was super confident on Sandhagen. So I put a decent amount of money, let's say $50 on Sandhagen to win the fight. And then I put like 20 on him to get a knockout. And then I put like 30 on knockout round 3, just because I thought that was going to be the round to do it. So at the very least, if you're confident in somebody winning, you're going to get that money line thing where it's just like, yeah, okay, he won the fight, whether it goes to decision or whatever. I really thought he was going to get a knockout, and I got so lucky because he wasn't going to get a knockout. The only reason that he had the knockout was because he busted that dude's eyebrow open. But that I found a lot of success doing that, trying to cover bases. And then like if I was iffy on it more, and let's say Song Yadong was a great grappler. I don't think he is, but let's just say he is. Maybe you sprinkle a little bit on a specific round of Song winning the fight by a submission, right? It's worked out for me for some reason, dude. Like, I don't know. I know that that's a weird way to do it, and it's kind of scary to risk so much money at once, but it seems to just pan out. So I don't know. I like that's the thing that really is interesting to me right now with this is the betting, because a fight is already super exciting to watch. But when you feel a little bit invested in it, it just takes it from like 10 to 1,000, dude. It's so much more interesting. And you feel like you're like there's a part of you that's in on this, even though, you know, it couldn't be farther from the truth. But yeah, dude, betting is just a fucking blast with this stuff.
Yeah, no, I agree. And I'm sort of the same. Like I try not to overexpose myself on particular fighters. As you said, you were really confident on Sandhagen. And so I would tend to put more bets on someone like that. But I try not to overexpose myself on like some of the prelim fights that I know a little less about. But no, I agree. Like that is pretty much what like was my game plan on that fight. Like I did a decent money line bet. And then as I was saying to you, like right before the fight, I started to feel that possibly a knockout could be possible. I consider doctor stoppages a TKO, like always, like that does factor into my decision whether someone can cut them to the point where a fight would be stopped and classed TKO. So I put a little on the TKO as well. I didn't choose a round. I probably wouldn't have got it right, but no, I agree. Like that is a good way to do it. You put a bigger bet on the money line so that it's either way, whatever happens, if you're confident in the guy and he wins, you get it. And then you can get a little bit more spicy with the method and the round to try and, get the big win. But yeah, I think we're both lucky. We both picked Sandhagen for the KO. And it paid out well. I think it was like plus 500 or something. So, yeah,
and there were so many things, dude, in that fight that made it work out like that. If RoboCop hadn't been split open the fight before, that fight might have gone the distance with Song and Sandhagen, because it was bad. He was bleeding in his eye. It was clearly a bad cut. RoboCop's was way, way worse, dude. I think. I mean, that was bad. I don't understand how that dude continued fighting and then won. You bet on him pretty heavy. I bet on both guys. I actually was going against RoboCop at first, and then I threw a little bit of money down because you were so confident in him. And I'm glad that I did. I think I took him by knockout. Because a dude like that, it doesn't look like he's going the distance.
I mean, that seems to be all his fight. Like there was a fight, like one of his recent fights, where it was like that. He was getting like ruined, and then he came back and just dominated the dude. And yeah, I've seen him do that so many times now, where like that is literally what he's known for in my mind, is getting beaten at the beginning and then coming back and destroying guys. So that's what happened. Yeah,
it's a hell of a strategy.
They were saying with that cut, like if that, I don't know if you saw the picture of the doctor opening up the eye, they were saying that if that artery was severed or hit and cut, he could have literally died right there in the cage.
Yeah. With Song?
Which is with RoboCop. Because there's a picture, yeah. I don't know if you saw, where the doctor is opening up the cut, and you can literally see one of his arteries like going through the cut. Like you see a vein. And I was saying if that had been hit in the correct way to the point where it was cut or severed, he literally could have just died right there in the cage. Because it was like a main artery to his head, which is just mind-blowing to think about, because the dude's fight style did not change one iota.
Yeah, it didn't look like it affected him at all. And
his nose was literally falling off, and he just goes for another 10 minutes or 8 minutes or whatever. Like,
Are we actually saying that he's 30 years old? Is that like the consensus?
That's what they say.
Dude looks 50.
He's got a very old face. He doesn't have an old body, but he's got an old face. Yeah. I don't know. Wow, dude.
Fuck. Yeah, no, but what I was saying is like that fight worked out to where, Song was winning the fight on paper, according to the judges. I mean, like I think two of the three judges had Song winning that fight, which is interesting to me. I thought Corey was definitely winning it. But if they would have let the fight play out, and if Corey wouldn't have had an absolutely dominant round, like a 10-8 type round, we might have not gotten any of those bets that we were super confident on with Sandhagen. You know what I mean? It was just like all these pieces that fell into place going back to the fight before with that gruesome cut. The doctor seeing that one and then going in and seeing this one, it had to have messed with him a little bit to where he's like, yeah, I don't want this to continue. Because like I said, RoboCop's was worse than Song's. But hey, it worked out for us, worked out for Corey. I think Corey seems like a pretty nice dude. I don't know much about Song. There's obviously a language barrier there, but yeah, Sandhagen seems like a pretty dope dude.
I think it was 2-2 going into the fifth, and he was saying on Ariel's show that he felt that the distance play wasn't working and he needed to get in close and try and cut him with elbows. And that's exactly what he did. And that's exactly what won him the fight. So yeah, it was cool to see.
He made the adjustments.
Two, I believe. And it was with a rushing elbow. It wasn't a normal, like just, horizontal elbow. It was sort of rushing and vertical elbow almost, and like sort of grazed off the side of his eyebrow. It was really cool. It was a really good shot. And it didn't even look like it hit him that hard, but it opened him up like so bad.
Yeah, dude, it's so interesting what cuts people up. With going back to RoboCop's cut, I mean, you could tell that seemed more like a brain damage situation. It didn't really seem like a cutting situation because you could hear that thud. It sounded like someone like hitting a baseball with a wooden bat, dude. It sounded bad. And then this dude just, I mean, didn't even phase him. It didn't wobble his knees or anything, man. Like it's interesting that, I don't know what that dude's being fed, but it's wild that he recovered that quick. I'm on 280 right now. I wanted to go back to 281 real quick, 'cause there's a couple other fights that are dope. I think, I mean, some people don't get excited to see this, Esparza and Whaley fight. I think it'll be kind of cool just because you have a striker versus a grappler in women's MMA. Not the most exciting for a lot of people. I still find it pretty dope. The grappler usually does better against a striker, right? In women's MMA, we tend to say that, especially in low level. This is not low level, but what are your thoughts on this one?
I think it's Weili Zhang by domination, more than likely by finish. I think it's going to be like, do you remember seeing on Weili Zhang's come up when she fought Andrade and just came out and just steamrolled her? If you haven't, go back and watch that fight. I know Esparza and Andrade, they're not really like the same fighter, but I just think, yeah, I think Whaley is not going to come out and play it like Rose did. I don't think it's going to be this technical 5-round, like trying to keep distance, trying to play some game plan, boring sort of fight. I just think Whaley Zhang is going to come out and be aggressive, like probably more aggressive than you've ever seen her. And it's probably going to be a finish within 3 rounds. That might be a little biased because I do like Whaley Zhang. I think she's cool as. But yeah, I think that's how it's going to go. Like even like trying to take the bias out of it, I think that's how it's going to go.
Yeah. I mean, I'm probably biased just cause I like to see an American do better over a Chinese fighter. Like that's just kind of like how I always am. I try to always root for the Americans. Like I want them to win, but I mean, if it's a Brazilian or a Russian, they're usually pretty fucking good. It seems, China's starting to get a lot of stars. I mean, you know, we're just talking about Song. He's going to be a problem in the future for sure. Near future. I think he's pretty young. Man, Carla got the belt in the most boring fashion too. That was the worst fight I'd ever seen. And I felt like I got ripped off paying for that, that fight against Thug Rose. I don't think she should have the belt, to be honest, but at the same time, I'm still going to sprinkle a little bit of cash on her just because she is a fairly decent underdog. And if she can get it to the wrestling, then, I mean, she's got a much better chance. But she cannot strike with Zhang. She can't. I mean, she couldn't even strike with Rose. I'd like to see Rose and Wei Li again.
I'm just looking at the odds for this fight. And Carla Esparza is, for every 100 you bet, you win 360 back. So yeah. She is a heavy underdog. And, yeah, Zhang Weili has been just steamed all the way down to $1.32. So, yeah, $32 for every 100 bet. Yeah, so massive favorite, Zhang Weili.
That's why I'm going to sprinkle a little on Carla.
Yeah, dude, I was going to say your sprinkle will probably pay off if she wins. So,
yeah, dude. Yeah. Okay, so we don't need to spend too much time on that one. This one I am extremely excited for, dude. I love both these dudes, Poirier and Chandler. Personally, I don't think Chandler stands a chance against Poirier. Poirier is probably my very favorite fighter in the UFC, to be honest. I think he is hands down the best boxer, too. People say that, you know, Max Holloway is better at boxing than him. Poirier beat Holloway in a boxing match, basically. I mean, they were boxing. I think he's hands down the best boxer in the UFC, dude. I don't know what your thoughts are on this fight and then, like, Poirier's style, but the dude has come a long, long way. And like I said, just my absolute favorite fighter right now.
Yeah, I mean, I would tend to agree. This fight reminds me of when Gaethje came into the UFC and Poirier was the guy to stop him. Not that Chandler hasn't been stopped, but that's just how it reminds me of. I feel like Chandler will probably approach this fight the way he fought Gaethje, and Poirier will approach it with a game plan, as he does. I think Poirier wins it. Yeah, I mean, he's probably one of the best boxers in the UFC. I'd say people like maybe Petey Yan, maybe better, just in terms of just like pure technique of boxing. Poirier's probably got the best combos in the UFC. I mean, we've
seen him. He can avoid getting hit in a beautiful fashion, too. Like, when he leans away and then comes back with, like, a hook or jab, I've just never seen someone box so smooth, I guess. Maybe he's not the best technical boxer, like you're saying, but just the style. He can do it
for a long time as well. Like, we've seen him throw 40-punch combos against people where he's, like, I think he did it against Eddie Alvarez maybe at one point. Who was it? I don't know. He knocked out someone where he literally had him up against the fence and he throws like a 40-punch combo. And he's, as you're saying, he's like moving in and out, avoiding what's coming back. And he just finishes this guy. Like, it's almost like the old mate against the fence was like, can you just tire out already? But he doesn't tire out. He just keeps throwing until the ref stops. And yeah, he's very skilled. I would say he's like absolutely top five boxers in the UFC.
Who do you think's better than him other than Jan?
I would have to sit down and think about it, but I probably wouldn't put Holloway above him. I wouldn't put McGregor above him. Aldo's a decent boxer. Maybe he's not better than Poirier. I don't know.
He's pretty good at boxing.
He is pretty good. I just think there's guys out there that, I mean, Ngannou's not the worst boxer. Like, he does swing a lot of haymakers and stuff, but he is pretty decent boxer. I would definitely say Poirier is top five boxers in the UFC. I mean, he could even be higher than fifth. He could be fourth or third. I think it's an exciting fight and that it is bad blood. They don't like each other. But I think Poirier gets the win. That I would agree with you. I don't know if I would go stop it. It's only going to be three rounds too, isn't it?
Yes. Yeah. That's what's going to be interesting. It's going to be like the Gaethje fight, but I think there will be a finish on Poirier.
Okay.
Because, I mean, we got to remember too, dude, Chandler gets knocked down pretty easily, man. Ferguson knocked him down. I know that, I mean, Ferguson's been on a downward spiral, but I think he was already in that downward spiral when he had fought Chandler. I mean, this was not that long ago when they fought. And everyone other than Chandler made Ferguson look like shit, you know? And it was a competitive fight for Ferguson. So, I don't know. Chandler's definitely not overrated. I like the dude a lot. I'm going to try and get my hands on some of his, what are those, Crave sandwiches or whatever? What are the Cram sandwiches?
Yeah. You know, those look good.
They look bomb. I mean, you can't go wrong with the peanut butter jelly, but I like the dude a lot. I think that, like, both these dudes seem like pretty stand-up guys. I like Dustin Poirier because he seems like he's actually, like, a functioning alcoholic, too. I think that he fucking drinks a lot like I do. Which is interesting that he can have such good cardio drinking that much. I mean, there's home videos of this dude, like, recently where he's, like, doing magic tricks, and he's just sloshed, dude. Like, you can tell he is wrecked. And this dude's still going out there and competing. He's number two in the division right now, in the very most competitive division in the world. Like, the dude's just a G, man. I really like him. I didn't want to spend too much more time on this card, but, like, this Molly McCann fight, it's always interesting when this chick fights. She's fighting someone that looks pretty hot here. I've never heard of Erin Blanchfeld. But
I don't know too much about her, but I've heard lots of praise about her. So I would go as far as to say this is probably at this in this run of Molly's, because she's had a few runs. I would call this the Paddy run. This is her run that she's had since Paddy's been in the UFC, and they've, like, Paddy's not fighting on this card. This would be the first card that they haven't fought on together in like three fights or something. But I just feel like she's different now that he's in the UFC, and she's, like, as you can see, sort of going on a bit of a run. Yeah. Was this?
This is Aaron.
Yeah, this is. Yeah, okay. But I think Molly's on like a four-fight streak at the moment. She seems to be going on a bit of a run. So I would say in this particular run, this is probably her toughest opponent. I think there you go. So three-fight streak. Okay. Did she fight Talia Santos? She fought Santos. I'm going to have to go back and watch that fight. That's interesting.
That Hannah Goldie fight was great, too. She did a good job. It wasn't a great fight, but just her finish was good. And you bring up a good point, man. I'm wondering from, like, just kind of like my weird way of thinking, if she's going to be really thrown off. You know, Patty's going to be there with her. But I'm wondering if she's going to be thrown off because Patty's not fighting.
Yeah, I mean, that plays into it, in my opinion, with certain fighters, things like this. You know, you've got to factor in all the different sort of things that come into it. And I think that plays a big part in it. This chick, as far as I know, is not shit. Like, she seems pretty damn good. She's fought JJ Aldrich, which is, JJ Aldrich is pretty old, and Miranda Maverick's not bad. She's pretty good. She fought Brogan Walker. When?
Oh, I'm trying to look at these decisions versus finishes, because McCann seems to be a finisher lately. Her last two and then finishes. This girl's two fights, she has a guillotine choke in round two standing, which is interesting. And again, we were just talking about how guillotines don't seem to work very often. So the chick's probably, she's clearly strong if she can pull off a standing guillotine. And then a decision. So, and then a decision before that and a decision before that. So Molly's actually a bigger finisher. So that'll be interesting, but it will just be kind of fun to see if she is going to be affected by Patty not being there. I'm curious to see what Tapology thinks. Oh, shit. Blanchfield to win by a lot. But if a knockout's coming, it's going to come back again.
That's right. I think Blanchfield's a wrestler. I think that's what she is, from memory. I think she's a wrestler. I can't recall seeing a fight with her. I've definitely looked at her record a lot. I saw Brogan Walker there, who's she's a recent tough winner. And I remember looking at her. Actually, no, she lost that fight. Sorry. She was in the final of the recent tough and she lost. But I remember looking at Blanchfield's record back then as well. I think she's a wrestler. I think she's probably going to try and wrestle Molly, because that would be her way to victory. I see Molly coming out with pressure, but again, the matchmakers always know what they're doing. 95% of the time they know what they're doing. They're trying to build Molly right now, so that, in my opinion, also factors into this. What are they seeing? What are they trying to do with this match? Who are they trying to put on? As you can see, Erin Blanchfield's 9-1. So I wouldn't imagine that's usually someone that they're trying to sacrifice, for lack of better words, you know? So I think it's going to be interesting. I think they're probably putting these two together and going, this is even. Let's see who wins.
Huh. Yeah, that's interesting. You made a good point there with they want, because it is like this interesting friendship that, because everyone's on Patty right now. It's this interesting kind of friendship between him and her. And they almost come in a package, like they're doing the press conferences together. Yeah, why are they putting her against this chick that's, almost undefeated, 9-1. That's a really good record. I don't know how many of those were in the UFC. I should have looked at that. But yeah, man, as far as I'm concerned, those are the four that are really interesting. Dan Hooker fighting. I didn't realize that.
I think I saw Dominic Reyes there as well. I'd be keen to see if he can break this bad streak that he's on, this skid. Ryan Spann's not the worst. He's not the best either, but that's an interesting fight.
Huh. Yeah, man. That'll be interesting
if he can break that skid. And Brad Riddell's on there. He's on a bit of a skid as well, I think.
Okay.
Is
he a New Zealander?
He's a New Zealander.
I can't tell if those stars are red or not. Oh, yeah, okay. New Zealand. All right. Yeah, man. I mean, you got all over the freaking map here, dude, fighting. You got a couple of New Zealanders.
Carlos Olberg. He's an interesting prospect.
Man, what do you think about Dan Hooker, dude? I feel like he's really kind of set himself up. He's a tough dude. He's willing to fight anybody, but he's not smart when it comes to taking matches.
Yeah, dude. I don't like this match for him either. He's on a skid, and he took this match that is, in my opinion, not good for him. I see this dude putting a leg lock on him and tapping Dan out in the first round, which sucks because I like Dan Hooker. I would tend to agree with you. He's really played the I'll take any fight card, and it keeps not playing out in his favor. We don't know what it's playing out like for him monetarily. Maybe he's getting rewarded very well for doing what he's doing. I know the UFC put him up in a house for a year for free and shit like that when it was COVID was going on. But yeah, as we can see here, yeah, I mean, Islam he did look good against Nasrat, but Nasrat had a whole bunch of shit going. I think his mum died the week of that fight, and then had visa issues a day before, only landed in Vegas or something 5 hours before the fight.
And he just beat him by decision. It's not like he beat his ass.
He was dominating, but he didn't finish him, obviously. And it was by decision. And then, as you can see beforehand, Poirier was a good fight. He looked competitive in that in the beginning, but he took a lot of damage, an immense amount of damage. And then he got knocked out in the first round against Chandler. And then he had that win against Nasrat, and then another two losses again. And now he's fighting another grappler.
Would you say maybe similar to Ferguson? It kind of looks like Dustin.
I already know what you're going to say.
Left him with some brain damage?
Yeah. Yep.
You don't agree?
That's been my opinion for I do. That's been my opinion for a while. He has been – Dustin Poirier changed him.
Okay.
Yeah. You watch at the end of that fight, man, Hooker is just – beaten to a pulp. Like, he doesn't even seem like in a correct mind state at the end of the fight. Like, he's out of it. I think he got changed in that fight, and then he got knocked out in his next fight by Chandler in round one. So yeah, I think he's changed. And then
so he's essentially lost since Poirier. I mean, you yourself said that. I mean, this Nasrat one seemed almost like a fluke. I'm not putting words in your mouth here, but that's kind of what I'm gathering from what you're saying, is that it was.
And I wouldn't say fluke, but I would just say everything lined up for him in that fight. Everything was put into his favor by, like, no one was making that happen. The situation just was what it was, but pretty much everything was in his favor. If he wanted any sort of extra advantages, he got them basically by way of happenstance.
Yeah, it sucks, man. It sucks to see that, because he seems like a nice dude. He hangs out with his dad all the time and shit. There's funny videos of his dad like making fun of him and shit. Sucks, but you know, this is, I guess, part of the fight game. Let's get into the big card here, where we're gonna try and hopefully get our first official episode out for, because dude, I'm fucking stoked for UFC 280 here.
Yeah, it's a good one.
It is probably the most stacked card of the year. I think that's safe to say, right? What other cards were there that were good?
Well, I'm pretty sure I saw that Sean Brady versus Bilal Muhammad's on the prelims. That tells you something.
It's definitely on the card. I like Bilal
Muhammad that much, but Sean Brady is like a pretty hyped up prospect at the moment. That's an awesome fight. And yeah, that's on the prelims from what I've heard. Yeah, look at that. So that's pretty stacked.
That cannot be a prelim fight, dude. I know. I see what you're saying. It's 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. See
in the
six.
Middle there? It says main card for Caitlin Chookagian.
Wow. And then
prelim. Yeah.
Prelim final. Holy shit.
I mean, you got Muhammad Makhachev on the prelims, which, yeah, a lot of people don't know of him yet, I guess. But, you know, Armin Petrosian, he's a big prospect. Jelton Almeida is literally the first fight. Which is that's probably, they want to kick off the card with some hyped up shit. Yeah, dude, it's a good card. A lot of Russians, as you said, but that's because they're in Abu Dhabi, and I would assume most of these guys are Muslim.
Yeah.
So that like plays into the whole Dubai thing.
A lot of the sheiks watching at that.
Yeah. Yeah.
Where do you want to start with this one? You know, obviously for time's sake, we won't hit all these fights. Do you want to kind of start off talking about this Almeida fight?
Yeah. I mean, yeah, we can talk about that. I don't know too much about this Shamil guy, but I just know from what I've seen of Jelton Almeida, like he literally only fought on 279, I think it was, in Paris. And he got a first round KO, I believe. That's what everyone thought he was going to do. I would have to look a little bit more about these two guys and watch a little bit of tape on this dude in particular, this Shamil guy. Oh, hang on. So he's lost. Okay. He lost to Chris Dorcas and Sergey Pavlovich. So I'm going to say Jelton Almeida is going to knock this dude out in a round.
Lost to Curtis Blaydes in round two as well. Curtis Blaydes is no slouch, but he did beat Andrei Arlovsky. That's a good sign. If he would have lost to Arlovsky, that would be bad. I used to love Arlovsky, dude. He's one of the ones that got me into the UFC. Him and Tim Sylvia, which were boring fights looking back, but I used to just like them and the Tito Ortiz and Ken Shamrock, dude. Those old trilogies were really cool to me.
Chuck Liddell, Forrest Griffin.
Lost to Santos. This is when Santos was good.
I just see at the top that he lost to Chris Dorcas.
Yeah.
And for me, Chris Dorcas, I do believe he's a slouch, in my opinion.
Okay.
I thought he was good at the beginning. And then I've just come to see that he's literally just a bloated light heavyweight fighting at heavyweight. And he doesn't really have the punching power. He doesn't really have the strength to wrestle these guys. I think he fights at like 235 or something. In a division where most guys are like at the smallest 240. So yeah, I if he lost to Chris Dorcas, I'm going to fade the guy really hard.
Looks like they were trying to make that match twice. He was about to fight Cyril Gane, which sounds like he would have gotten fucked. Yeah, they tried to make this. So it's interesting, you know, kind of, you know, tying back your original point, or maybe not your original point, but, you know, they're in Russia, basically, right? I mean, obviously, they're in Abu Dhabi, but there's a ton of Russians here, a ton of Muslims, right? Why would they be setting this dude up? Because you know that they probably, I mean, the crowd is going to want this dude to win, this Shamil. I'm not even going to try his last name, but it ends in a V, so that's always something to watch out for. Why would they be pairing him up with a Brazilian, which is kind of similar to the main event where you have, you know, a Brazilian versus a Russian? Why would they be starting this off with, in your opinion, what seemed, and I can't disagree with you because I don't really know much about either of these guys, why they would be setting him up to lose against a Brazilian here?
That's a good point, and I hadn't thought about it. But one thing I would say is just go back to that fight and click on it again and just see when that fight was canceled, because Jelton Almeida may be a late replacement.
Like they were supposed to fight.
So they were supposed to fight last month. So he was supposed to fight him on 279, I believe, is what that is saying.
Okay.
Yeah. So maybe that wasn't potentially supposed to happen on this card. Jelton Almeida does fight on 279, gets a first round finish, and says, hey, I'll fight this guy again at 281 or 280. Yeah, I don't know. That's a good point. I didn't think about that. Yeah. Maybe the matchmakers see something again. You can never be too sure, but I'm going to back Jelton just because of what I've seen so far. He's almost like a RoboCop. Like, he's almost like that. Like, he almost looks like him, just this big, tall Brazilian bald guy, muscly, and just rushes out and steamrolls guys.
Man, yeah, I'll probably side with you on that unless I find something that like really stands out. But I think that what you say about the matchmakers knowing something, I think that's really good insight, honestly. And these dudes are really close in the rankings. I mean, Almeida's 19, Shamil's 21. That's not a big discrepancy at all.
The records are like pretty similar too. I mean, well, Shamil's had a fair few losses, but 20-7 versus 17-2. It's that's not too big of a discrepancy either between the two. Like, it's reasonably close.
Almeida definitely has a better record, though. I would say it's considerably better. But yeah, you're right. Not crazy. I mean, it's not like he's got a losing record or an even record. I'm going to get a refill, dude. If you want to just like talk about any one of these here, which one did you want to get into next?
I mean, Ozdemir Krylov, I'm not really interested. The next one I'm probably interested in is Muhammad. And yeah, as we said before, I'm super high on that guy.
Okay. Well, yeah, dude, I'll be right back. If you want to just like, kind of talk about whatever you're feeling here with these two.
Yeah, for sure, man. Well, I'd have to look a bit more at Malcolm Gordon, I think. He's fighting out of London. Okay. They're both out of England. Oh, no. Oh, sorry. He's fighting out of Canada. Yeah. I don't know. I'd have to really look at more tape on Malcolm Gordon, to be honest. They're ranked very closely, 18, 19, coming on a 2-fight win streak. Muhammad Makhachev undefeated in like 30 fights. It's very similar age, very similar height. So Muhammad Makhachev looks like he's doing some cross training at the moment. He's training at two different gyms. He's got one for his primary and one for specifically striking. That would be because, as I said before, he's mainly a wrestler. I say that, but it was a knee to the head that led to his guillotine win in his debut fight. Yeah, I mean, I've already said I've got to take Muhammad. That's who I would be leaning with for sure.
Okay.
I was just saying that it looks like if you go down a little bit, Muhammad Makhachev, he's got two gyms listed there. It seems like he's got his primary where he does all his jiu-jitsu, wrestling, and all that sort of stuff that he's sort of his strengths lie. And then he's got another one specifically for striking. So it seems like he's doing a bit of cross training at the moment, which I didn't realize, but that's interesting. I haven't really seen that on someone's Tapology page before, where they have primary and then a striking gym as well. That's interesting.
So what do you think? I mean, have you heard of either one of these gyms?
I haven't. No, I don't know either. I mean, I think I've seen the name Aspire maybe on someone's on a Typology page before, but yeah, I couldn't tell you whether it's a very great gym or anything like that. I don't know any of these guys that you're scrolling past. I haven't seen any of these guys' names before either. So a
lot of English fighters, it looks like.
Yeah,
Northern Ireland, I should say. But isn't that an English flag?
I think it's I'm pretty sure it is.
Northern Ireland, but like, because I know Paddy uses that flag.
Yeah, okay.
I love how they do this Chuck Norris shooting if they don't have the picture of. It's weird as fuck, but it's funny. Okay, so yeah, so you're, I mean, high on this.
I'm high on him. I'm probably going to be all in on him. I'm probably going to straight up say the odds on him will just be absolutely steamed. Like, there probably will be no money embedding money line on him. I'd be very surprised if they're like over $1.40. Yeah. Wow, look at that. Yeah. Okay. The money would be in the finish. But yeah, like I said, I'm so high on this guy. I will watch tape on Malcolm Gordon, but that won't change my mind. Like, nothing I watch on him will change my mind. Yeah. I just, Makhachev is crazy. I know the UFC is trying to put him on. I know they're trying to, I wouldn't say fast track him, but he is, like, he wants to be fast tracked. He wants to fight guys in the top 15 right now. That's what he said. He wants it. He's ready for it. He wants top five guys even.
Look at this too. 22 versus 32, man. I'm all in with you after seeing that. And I mean, this is me talking. You know, Canadians out there aren't going to want to hear it. I have really bad luck when I bet on Canada. Like, I have a lot of bad luck, and it's nothing against Canada. I love my Canadian friend. I talk to so many Canadians on my podcast, on my other podcast. Dude, it is, I've had horrible luck with these guys. If there's three fighters from Canada on the card, I've found a pattern where the first one tends to win, usually by decision or like in some sloppy fashion, like the last one with Robert Cho. I mean, it was a weird show. And, you know, and then her Canadian brethren fucking really shitting the bed. So I don't know, man. Yeah, dude, I'm all in. I'm all in with you, dude. We can discuss that one when that time comes a little further. Cause I think it would be smart too, to really focus in on five fights, right? I mean, I'll always sprinkle a little bit on every fight just cause it makes it fun. But I mean, I think that we have two of our five already, maybe six if we're confident. Looks like Almeida, and then you know, whether we're going to get in a finish, we'll just talk money line right now. But Almeida, and then Makhachev. Am I pronouncing his name right?
That's correct. Yeah,
Makhachev. Okay, so we got two right there. Moving up, I mean, dude, Bilal Muhammad and Sean Brady. I know that Bilal Muhammad is a big deal right now. I'm all in on Sean Brady, dude, especially knowing the connection that he has with Joe Pyfer, who I really like. I know you heard his story on Ariel's show.
Yeah. Yeah. And he's into cars too, which I like.
Okay. So that checks off a box for you, man. I mean, the dude's tough. Obviously, you know, you're familiar with the story too. He went through Contender Series one time, really lost in a shitty way, had to build back his career over a 3-year period, comes back. And clearly Dana White likes him, so they're going to build his career up. But he talks about Sean Brady and how this dude's like a military style when it comes to training. He's very specific. He won't even go and support his fellow gym members and like childhood acquaintance because he's in the zone for this Bilal Muhammad fight. And Bilal's dope. I mean, Bilal's a good fighter. I don't really care for him personally, but I don't know. Maybe that's just a weird feeling I have.
I'm the same. I don't like Bilal.
Is there something about him for you? I mean, is there a reason, or is it because I can't put my finger on it. There's just something about him.
It just rubs me the wrong way. I feel like he just, yeah, I don't know what it is. And his fight style for me, while it may be effective at times, I don't find it the most interesting. I think he's another guy that it's just, he's just grinding. I don't see any attempt to really finish. Sean Brady's the opposite. That dude's trying to finish you. Sean Brady is sick. I'm the same as you. I like Sean Brady. And I think he's going to do extremely well. I know people are avoiding him as well. He's found it hard to get fights. People don't want to fight him.
Last two fights were grappling matches, dude. He hasn't fought since the end of 2021.
Yeah. He probably couldn't get fights. Probably kept getting turned down. But yeah, I'm with you, man. He fought. I remember watching him. Craig Jones, I don't know if you know much about grappling. Craig Jones is like a top 10 in the world at grappling. I might be speaking out of turn there for the real Brazilian jiu-jitsu hardcores, but from what I've seen, Craig Jones is like one of the top BJJ guys in the world. He trains at Alexander Volkanovski in BJJ. He's an Australian guy. And Sean Brady went out there and beat the dude. Like, it wasn't a very convincing win in grappling, but he beat the dude. He's got skills, man. And I think he's going to beat Bilal. I might even look just quickly at the odds, because it would be interesting to see who they are favoring.
Well, one thing that I was pointing while you're looking for that is that they were supposed to fight back in 2020. I'm sure that COVID had something to do with that fight getting canceled. But they were supposed to fight back in 2020 when the records, I mean, Brady's record was essentially the same. I think he collected one more win, if I'm not mistaken.
So Brady's the favorite, but it's a pick and fight. It's $1.70 to $2.20. So you can get good odds on Brady, $1.70 to win. That's pretty good. That's only 2-1.
Okay.
And that's favorite as well. So I'm interested in that fight, but I am riding with you, and I think Brady will beat him. It probably will be the late finish or by decision more likely than a finish. From what I've seen, apart from the Luque fight, Bilal's got, like, he could take damage. He did get knocked out by Luque, but then he came back and beat him. I'm on Brady. I'm actually surprised that it's 60-40. I would have thought it would be like 80-20, because a lot of people are high on Brady.
People are high on Muhammad from what I've seen, man. I'm just kind of getting new into this. I said, I've been a real casual fan since I was a kid, but getting more and more into it, I hadn't heard of Sean Brady until like a year ago. And like Brady, they've been pushing, right? I think more people are high on Bilal, but more people that know about the sport know about Brady, and they know how, I mean, the dude's undefeated, which is not easy to do these days. And that's not like a 6-0, it's 15-0. He's the real deal, it seems like, man. So yeah, 100% with you, Brady, I think, but I think that he could finish him, man. I think that this might actually be a finish.
Yeah. It's not out of the question. It's likely. I'd say decision is more likely, but the finish absolutely could happen. And yeah, it's not out of the question at all. Also like this Caio Barajo guy. He's a contender guy. I don't know too much about Muradov, and I don't want to talk on it too much. But yeah, I like Caio Barajo. I would probably pick him in that. That Muradov guy isn't really a slouch. He's nothing crazy either, but Caio Barajo is good. He's got free spirit tattooed across his neck. You've probably seen him fight before.
Okay.
He's interesting. He's very wild, very like swings wild shots, got very good jiu-jitsu pedigree. Hangs out with Hamzat and stuff, and Darren Till. He's cool, man. I like him.
That'll be interesting. There's quite a few Brazilians on this card. I know there's kind of always a lot of Brazilians because there's just a lot of Brazilian fighters, but definitely in on those three. I don't know either of these ladies here, to be honest. Benil Darouche, that'll be an interesting one just because he's another one that seems to be propped up a little bit. This will be pretty wild too. Do you have one in this? Well, you can just kind of guess right now.
I'd probably be... Look, they're both great. Darouche is sort of forgotten about.
Yeah.
So this will be his first fight back since he's had a serious knee injury, I believe it was. So that's a red flag to keep in mind. But Gamrot isn't shit either. He's very good. I think it was, who did he fight last? I remember he fought someone, and I remember people went on about that fight for a while because it was a good showing.
American Top Team.
And Sarukian, there you go. So that was that Sarukian versus Gamrot fight. And I remember people went on about that for weeks because it was just back and forward scrambles, back and forward striking. Like it was, and people are super high on Sarukian as well. I'd be taking him over Darouche in this. I think it'd be pretty even though. Benil's very deceiving in the way that like he's actually like a lot stronger and like bigger than people think. Like he's a really fucking thick guy, very strong, has strong kicks, strong grappling. Yeah, he's good. He's just very forgotten about.
Yeah, I mean, I think the last time he fought was
probably by decision. Yeah, that was when he was bending the arm. It was either the arm or the knee. I think it might have been the knee. I think the arm was Charles. He was bending Tony's knee right back, and he said he even heard it pop, but Tony wouldn't tap. Yeah, went to a decision with Tony, and then he was supposed to fight Islam, and his knee, so I think he broke his knee or broke his ankle. Maybe it was the ankle. I don't know. He had some sort of a leg injury, and so he's had an operation and everything else and healed up, and this is his first fight back. But he's fighting a monster. He's fighting a guy that is really fucking good.
It's not a long time to be off with a knee injury, man, if I'm being honest. I mean, 2021, the middle of it, May, right? May 15th, 2021 was his last fight. He was apparently injured, as you say, in 2022, this year, just in February. I mean, that's not a lot of time, dude. I'm all in on Gamera here for sure.
Yeah. For sure. That's okay. 6 or 7 months.
Going back here. Yeah, dude, that's not a long time for a freaking knee. So we have next, I mean, the three big ones here, what makes this card so great. Peter Yan and O'Malley, we talked about that a little bit. I am going to bet on O'Malley, but I'm going to get Yan by decision as well. Because I think that if this fight goes to a decision, Yan will probably win it. But I also kind of have this weird suspicion that Sean won't let it go to a decision. I hope he doesn't make this another fucking eye poke situation or some sort of foul. I might actually bet the prop that a point gets taken away from O'Malley.
Okay, that's interesting. I wonder if I can get that prop. And I know it's not available yet. I can't see. I'm looking at the odds right now, and Sean O'Malley's a 4-1 dog.
You can't not take him at 4-1 odds, dude. You just can't not sprinkle a little bit. But I think if it goes to decision, Yan's got it. I don't think that O'Malley can knock out Yan personally. I don't think so. It could happen. This clearly isn't going to go down to the feet. I would be really surprised. The submission's got to be astronomical. But yeah, man, for the amount, it's usually like between 2,000 to 5,000 for a point deduction, positive odds. So, I mean, I'll put $1 or $2 on O'Malley losing a point. Why not?
Yeah. I remember Yan always gives up the first round. I don't know. Like, that's one thing I've noticed. He really goes slow in the first round. And I feel like O'Malley is going to like give 100% in the first round. I thought that would always happen before this fight was announced. And then particularly after the last fight with Munoz, a lot of people was telling O'Malley, like even Ariel told O'Malley to his face, like, you lost that first round. So I feel like that's going to play in his. I think O'Malley's going to come out with 100% in that first round and try and take advantage of Yan typically being slower in that first round. I don't know what that means. I don't know if he's going to have success with that, but I just feel like that is what's going to happen. But yeah, dude, I'm the same. I'll take a sprinkle on O'Malley. I think realistically the odds are in Peter Yan's favor. He's absolutely steamed. I think he's like $1.36 or something, $1.26. So yeah, you're going to have to pick the method to really get some decent money on Yan. But yeah, I tend to agree with you. I'll put a sprinkle on O'Malley and probably I think I'm on Yan.
Are you going to put any on a first round knockout from O'Malley, knowing like what you kind of laid out there? Because if he doesn't get the first round knockout, he did get a little gassed in that fight against the Moutinho, right? That's his name. He got gassed, dude. He wasn't like, you know, completely tired out, but you saw him looking up at the clock. And he was just using this dude as a punching bag. When someone's actually striking efficiently back, he's going to get tired quicker. He's going to have to move more away from this little dude. And, you know, I think he's going to be gassed by the end of the second round, halfway through the third, to the point where maybe Yan could capitalize, because Yan's not going to get gassed.
No, that's a good point. I'll wait for the prop. I'll see what it is. If it's something crazy, like $15, $20 odds or something, like just something, which, I mean, it usually sort of is for what we're sort of talking about, who these two guys are. I can imagine the odds. Sean O'Malley, first round KO would be pretty high. So, yeah, I mean, I probably will take a sprinkle on that because, as we said, that's probably where his advantages lie. When Peter Yan's taking it slow, when he's got his most energy, he can run out, rush. So maybe I will. I won't be too confident on it. It'll be like a $2 bet or something.
Small, but yeah. Nothing crazy. I mean, I'm going to put most of my money probably on Yan decision. But that's probably negative odds too. The one thing that is interesting is that prop. And then DraftKings does it real interesting where they tie a KO with a TKO and a disqualification. So you have KO, TKO, DQ, all one. Is that how yours does it too?
I've seen it before, but typically I don't think so. I think with a DQ, we usually get refunded or something. Okay. Or maybe they half the odds, I think, as well. I've seen them also do. So if it's a 2-1, you just get even money on that leg. Okay. Yeah.
And they do double chance finish too, where you can take Yan by knockout and decision. So if one of those things pans out, you get paid.
That saved my ass a lot. I love them. Yeah, the double chances are really good. They're good.
Okay. So yeah, I might look at that for him, and then I might just sprinkle an O'Malley finish, because that way you're covering your ass. If Peter Yan wins by knockout or decision, he's not going to win by submission. I'll be eating my words right now. If he wins by a decision, you're covering yourself probably a little bit more realistic that a knockout or decision happens. And then like you're also kind of shooting for the moon, as they say, throwing $5 or $10 down on O'Malley money line. But yeah, man, I think that we're in agreement on that. And then Aljo Dillashaw, we talked about a little bit as well. I don't like Dillashaw, dude. I'm impartial to Sterling. I think that I think Dillashaw really robbed Sandhagen. I know that's not his fault. It's the dumb judging. But I also agree. Like Sandhagen. But
yeah, Sandhagen won that fight. I agree. But it is what it is. I think it's probably going to be Aljo. I don't like Aljo, but I think just the wrestling, the submission threats, the height and length. I just think that's what's going to get it for him. Do you think TJ's still in the gear? I think he might still be on the gear. That's a bold claim. Oh, so, yeah, he got done for EPO. He got done for steroids and EPO and stuff. So there's a lot of talk still that people still think that he is on the gear and he's still taking stuff.
I don't doubt it, dude.
I think there's probably a good chance that he is still on some sort of gear, to be honest with you.
So do you think something happens where this fight falls through?
How far away is it? 3-4 weeks? Nah, October. I don't think that's in threat. But I think it plays a part in this is a championship fight, so it's 5 rounds. The thing that he did get popped for before was a stamina increasing drug, from what I know. Called EPO, and it was to do with his weight cutting. He was finding that the weight cuts were making his stamina like depleted. So he took this thing and it was able to make his stamina grow after weight cuts or something or other. I don't quite understand it all, but a lot of people still think he's on that. And this is a 5-round fight with a guy who typically likes to go long. I think Aljamain's going to take it, unfortunately. Like I said before, I just want them both to break each other's legs at the same time or something. But, yeah, we'll see what happens, I guess. Yeah.
I mean, dude, I don't hate Aljo. I don't hate Dillashaw either. I just think, for some reason, John Jones is the only one that I'm okay with cheating, just because he was such an entertaining fighter. He can cheat all damn day, dude, as far as I'm concerned. It's still cheating, and it sucks. I like DC a lot, and it sucks that he probably won those fights because he was doping. But I don't know. The dude's an incredible watch, and you can't say the same with Dillashaw. If Dillashaw came out with the fireworks that John Jones did, I'd say, hey, man, maybe I'd like him more. But his style's not that awesome.
It's not so much as of late. I will say, and I hate that I'm even defending him, but if you go back to some of these early Cody Garbrandt fights and stuff, they were pretty electric.
Were they?
The lead up to them, the press conference, there was bad blood between them. They even did a tough series where they coached against each other, Cody Garbrandt and TJ Dillashaw. There was the whole thing where Conor McGregor was involved, calling out TJ for being a snake and all this sort of stuff. It was pretty exciting back then. But no, I agree with you. TJ, after the suspension, TJ fighting Corey Sandhagen and stuff. Not the most exciting.
So what is their age difference real quick? I did want to check that because if, I mean, we know that Garbrandt is kind of washed. I mean, it's tough to say that someone like him is washed, but he is. I mean, let's face it. He's not what he once was. If Dillashaw was at his prime when Garbrandt was, then maybe if there's a significant age difference, that would just be another reason. Because I'm starting to really realize these younger dudes, like I don't care if it's a 22-year-old versus a 25-year-old. The 22-year-old is coming up and they're more technical. Okay, 3 year, anything crazy.
But, I didn't actually realize was that old.
Yeah, I thought he was younger too. He's taller. He's got a more significant reach. Not that, you know, with Aljo's fighting style, a reach really matters too much. I guess it does actually because you can get in more chokes. Your wrestling is definitely a little more
efficient. Body triangle.
Yeah. So, the leg reach, they don't show here for some reason. But he's taller. He's younger. He fought more recently. He fought Peter Yan twice. They both beat Sandhagen. I actually think that Dillashaw lost to Sandhagen. I think that it clearly Sterling beat Sandhagen. I think it's Sterling all day. So you in agreeance there, you think?
Yeah, I'm in agreeance. And I'm just taking a quick look at the odds, if I can find them right here. Aljamain Sterling is the favorite. TJ Dillashaw's $2.35, so nearly 2.5 to 1. Yeah, I mean, that's pretty decent odds for Aljo to win $2.65 as a favorite. You can make some money on that.
Put 100 down, you get 160, you're saying?
Yep.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Why not, dude? I mean, pick...
So that's pretty good.
Pick the double method, decision and submission on Aljo, and you'll probably be pretty safe there with that. I don't think he's much of a striker.
You probably get close to 2 to 1 on that, I would imagine. If he's $1.65 money line, you probably get 2 to 1 on the double.
All right, dude. Big one here. Can I just say this real quick, man? I don't think that Islam deserves this. I really don't think that he deserves this fight right now. You look at who he's fought. Let me lay out my case for anyone that might disagree. You look at who the dude's fought. I understand he's dominant. You know, he has Khabib's blessing, which, you know, people put up on this massive pedestal. I'm not a big Khabib fan, dude. I don't think he should be in the GOAT conversation, even though he's undefeated. That's me. He's not, maybe he is top 10 all time for me, but he's not the very best. I just can't put him there. The best fighter that he's fought by far, which we just talked about right before this became kind of washed up, unfortunately, because we both like him, is Dan Hooker. And Dan Hooker, if I looked right, he's ranked 68 on Tapology. I don't even think the UFC has him in the top 15 anymore. I could be wrong about that. Let me double check here. Where's lightweight?
Yeah, he's ranked 14.
Okay, 14. Okay. Man, I don't think he should be there at 14 personally, but I mean, this is the official numbers, I guess. What are your thoughts on that, dude? Because like, I don't know. I mean, he comes into the UFC and fights really people that I haven't heard of, man, to be honest.
Yeah, I agree. He probably needed one more to really solidify it. In my mind, I would have liked to have seen him fight Beneil Dariush. I think that was an appropriate test. Yeah, the Dan Hooker and the Bobby Green fights were basically gimmies. I like both guys. I like Bobby. I like Dan. But they were like, Dan Hooker was like on a week, I think. Bobby Green was on a couple of days, maybe. He shouldn't be fighting for the championship. I think it's a timing thing. Beneil was like, the UFC wanted him to fight Beneil, but Beneil wasn't ready and UFC Dubai was coming up and they wanted this to happen at UFC Dubai.
Yeah.
I am taking Charlie Olives. I'm going to go with Charles Oliveira, like, cause I cannot doubt the dude anymore. I faded him so many times and proven wrong so many times in like an insane fashion, you know.
First round most of the time. I think Dustin Poirier is the only one to get him to round two. Like you, dude, I faded him against Poirier, against Gaethje, against Chandler, which I feel dumb for doing that now, with especially Chandler, even though, again, I like Chandler. Who here in the top 15 would you say should get the fight instead of Islam? Because again, I mean, you know, I think Islam should have fought Gaethje. I think he'd probably beat him, but at least it's fair. Poirier would be an interesting one too, because Poirier, people don't realize how good he is with jiu-jitsu.
I think if he was ready right now, Alexander Volkanovski.
Oh, really?
Mm. I think
Islam Makhachev fight.
No, I think. Oh, who should Islam fight? Is what you're saying?
No. I'm sorry, Charles. I'm sorry,
yeah, Charles. Right. Yeah, if he was ready, if he had been ready for this card, I reckon it should have been Volkanovski.
Interesting. Yeah,
I think he should have, like, he wanted it. He does want it. I think Oliveira's open to it. Definitely could have run off the hype from the last win and kept that whole hype thing going into this super fight, double champ, all the rest of it. Would have sold like crazy because it's a big fight. Would have given time for Islam to get that one more fight against the Benil or whoever, even a Sarukian who's like ranked 10 or something and fighting Benil this weekend. Even Sarukian versus, even Gamrot versus Islam would have been interesting because Islam's already fought Sarukian in his debut. And that was very competitive. I think Volkanovski fight would have been interesting.
That's very interesting. You're basically not even mentioning anyone that's officially in the weight class. And I can't say that I disagree at all. RDA, no fucking way.
And he bottled that fight. Islam said that he would fight RDA when RDA was fighting. Who was RDA? RDA was supposed to fight someone recently and it dropped out. He ended up fighting Renato Moicano. But when his fight dropped out, Islam offered the fight on Twitter, said, "I'll fight you, blah, 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 next weekend." And RDA was like, "No worries, let's fight then. Are you going to fill in? I need someone to fight." And then Islam just didn't respond and just completely fucked it all up. And the UFC was really pissed off because they took that as a real offer. And they were like, "Oh, Islam wants to fight RDA. Let's try and make this happen." And then he just bottled it and it didn't happen. And so they were going to punish Islam and make him fight Dariush before he got this chance. But as I was saying before, the timing just didn't work out and they wanted Islam to fight at Dubai. So he ends up getting the chance.
And the fight that you bring up here too would be interesting. This is a goofy ranking system, the men's pound for pound. Volkanovski is number one since Usman fell to four. So you have the pound for pound one versus the pound for pound three. That is interesting for sure. But yeah, man, I hope Charles gets it, dude. I like Charles a lot more, even though I think he's doing some weird voodoo shit. I honestly do. I think he does some weird shit in Brazil. Nothing against it. I think if it works, you know, and you're comfortable with that, use it. But even down to the alter ego of him bleaching his hair, that's a very strange thing to do. And Israel Adesanya talks about this a lot, talks about protection spells that his coach puts on him and stuff when he goes in and fights. People think that it's joking and maybe it is, maybe it's a placebo thing, but I think that stuff's interesting, especially since I'm all into conspiracies and shit. But yeah, dude, I can't see Charles losing this fight. And a lot of people are picking him to win this. A lot of other fighters. I don't know exactly what the what Tapology says. I know he's an under going into this.
And it is kind of 2.5 to 1 odds on Charlie, which I will take. I'll take that. I will even take the double. I'm going to take the mission. I will take that double. And that will probably be 4 to 4 or 5 to 1.
Sorry, you cut out there real bad. My computer's glitching out. What was that? You'll take the double?
Yeah, I think I'll take the double on Charles Oliveira by KO or submission. And I think you'll get pretty good odds for it as well.
Yeah, I don't see this going to decision for 5 rounds. 5 rounds, dude. Has Makhachev hasn't even, I mean, Oliveira hasn't fought in a fourth round either. They've never done the championship rounds, I don't think, with Oliveira.
I don't believe so, but I know for a fact Makhachev's never even entered into a fight that was 5 rounds. So
yeah.
Actually, no, I could be wrong. He might have fought into some Sambo 5-rounder or something. But when it comes to MMA, I don't believe he's ever fought a 5-rounder.
Okay. Do you think that maybe this is kind of set up to try and, for the story, the WWE aspect of it, just to bring Khabib back to fight Charles? Because that would be epic. I would actually really enjoy that.
I know that's a thought on everyone's mind. And I know Dana probably has hopes that that might happen. And I don't believe that it's not a possibility. Like, I believe there is a chance that, yes, like, if Oliveira goes out and just fucking starches Islam, that maybe there is a very small chance that Khabib gets back in shape and comes out to be like, you know, if you need a job done, do it yourself type thing. But I think that chance is very small just from what Khabib said. Like, he's very, not out of shape, but he's walking around at like 200, 210 pounds. That's a 60-pound weight cut. He also doesn't want to fight now that his dad's died. But yeah, no, I like that storyline, and I like that there's a small chance that could happen. Yeah.
That would be cool.
I know that a lot of people are thinking that, and I know that's on Dana's mind too, for sure.
If anyone could cut 60 pounds in a year, I think Khabib could, even though I don't consider him to be one of the greatest of all time, like it, which is crazy. I know a lot of people are probably like, how the hell can't you? I think he's very disciplined. He's very, very disciplined. He could definitely cut 60 pounds in a year for sure. And do it in a healthy way to where he could come back. But I think, honestly, I think at this point in Oliveira's game, I think he beats Khabib too. Honestly, I can't see the dude losing until he actually loses. And then I'll be like, okay, guys just come such a long way, man. But it sounds like, I mean, we can talk about this shit all night, dude. It's nighttime over here. I know it's daytime over there. I'm down to wrap up. Just, you know, we wanted to get something together, just kind of like shoot the shit on a few things. I thought it was dope, dude. Yeah, man. I don't know if you want to continue doing a show, we got to come up with a name. I like that name that you had.
Okay. I don't even remember what it was. But
Casual KO, dude. Casual KO, okay. Podcast.
Yeah, that's cool.
Do you like it?
Yeah, man. Yeah.
I say we go for it. What time is it over there, by the way? Right now it's 8:39 p.m. here.
It's 1:40 in the Arvo in the afternoon.
Okay, and you're Friday right now or Thursday?
Thursday. Yeah, 1:40 in the afternoon on Thursday.
Let me just double check here, because I think if I remember right, you're on the same time as Brisbane.
Yeah, that's pretty much, that's where I live, basically.
Yeah, you said 1:39, so yeah, it's 1:39 in Brisbane. Yeah, you're 17 hours ahead of me, so yeah, we can coordinate that. I mean, I'm down
usually,
to do
it. Oh, usually it would be about an hour and a half to 2 hours from now is probably the more optimum time, because usually I'd be at work right now.
An hour and a half to 2 hours from now, so... Okay. I mean, on Wednesday, as long as it's Wednesday, which is perfect time for Saturday, dude. Like, if we're talking about shit going down on Friday and Saturday. Because, I mean, like, Bellator's not off the table to talk about, too. And, like, Cage Warriors and all this other stuff. LFA is always fun. I'm down to talk about it. There's no shortage of this shit. We got a cool card coming up that we can kind of fuck around with, too. With Mackenzie Dern. And, yeah, man. I mean, I'm down to do it if you are, dude. I think that'll be dope. Do a little casual KO podcast here.
Yeah, man, for sure. Like, anytime that I can get the excuse to just talk shit about fighting for ages, I'll take it.
Well, dude, and I'll tell you what we'll do too. Because the audience, my audience, hopefully a decent amount of them will come over there. With the podcast feed, we'll get paid per plays, and we can use that money that we make to bet. We can use that in like a joint betting account. And then you know, PayPal you the cash, like split or something. And we can like do the parlay kind of thing like Ariel does with his group. You know, like I can pick two fights, two outcomes, you pick two outcomes, and you know, maybe give listeners like something, you know, send like one listener something with that cash and just like kind of fuck around with it. But yeah, man, it'll be fun
to bet with.
Dude. I love this shit, dude. I've been obsessed like since, you know, a couple, like I'd say 2 years ago, I got really into it. Again, I found like a new real passion for it. So I'm down to talk about it. And it's cool to get different perspectives from literally across the world. So I think it'll be cool, man.
Yeah, man. For sure. And I like not agreeing on every bet. That's the best thing. When you don't agree on all the bets, when there is some that you do, like you have different thoughts on and you think they're going to go different ways. I think like that's the funnest. That's what I like about the No Bets Barred podcast. They don't agree on everything. They have a lot of fights where they're like going opposite directions, and that makes it fun.
Yeah. Well, and that's funny too, because then like the show isn't wrong. Like, you know, if I pick one guy, you pick the other guy, one of us is going to win it. So it's like, you know, you can't be like, oh, these guys never get the right picks. there's some betting shows out there, dude, like on YouTube. I'm not going to mention names, but they're fucking bad. Like, they're bad. And so I'm not saying that we're going to come out here and get like a perfect record or anything, but like what makes them bad to me is they say that they don't miss any of their bets. They'll be like, yeah, we're like 50-3 on this Dana White contender series thing so far. And you go back to the last episode and they missed 3 of the 5 fights on that one. And it's like, dude, no, you're lying to your audience, first of all. And you're trying to get people to like lose money because they blindly trust your picks. It's fucking dumb. So, yeah, I just want to get out there and like, you know, have some fun and maybe like, you know, kind of create some kind of cool community. So,
yeah, for sure, man.
I'm down, dude. We'll do it on Wednesdays and Thursdays. We can see what's up this coming Wednesday. I'll put this out on my podcast, see what people think of it, and we'll see what's up.
Sounds good, man. For sure. Cool, man.
Well, I'm going to end this recording real quick. And I guess from now on, this is the Casual KO Podcast. Dude, I like the name for sure. It's kind of dope. Kind of dope. So thanks, everyone that did listen to it. And we'll be coming at you every week, hopefully, with more of these.